Good morning. I guess when y'all leave here this morning, some of you all will be lucky enough to have a flyer on your windshield. So I don't think that was for many of us, but you may have one, and I noticed it was a political flyer. They must have not really been from around here. There wasn't a coupon or anything that even mentioned anything about any food. And I don't know how they do things in the rest of the state, but I know in Delaware County, we like our hog fries with a little bit of campaigning. And there's no promise of a hog fry, so I'll hold out for a while. I've also been racking my brain trying to think of a joke about directions, about path, and I couldn't think of one. And the only one that kept coming to my mind was about the three hunters who were lost out in the woods, and one said, "Well, I know if we shoot up in the air three times, surely someone will hear or see that, and they'll come find us." And so the first one shoots, and nothing happens, and they wait a little while, and the second one shoots, and still nothing happens, and they look to their friend, and they say, "Well, maybe you should shoot." And he said, "Well, I would, but we're down to our last three arrows." That was the only one I could come up with. We're going to be in Proverbs chapter 7 this morning. The first few verses of Proverbs chapter 1 is known as the prologue, and usually whenever I start something new, I like to know what I'm jumping into. If I go to the movies, I want to know, not necessarily what the movie's totally about, but I want to know if we're going to see an action film or a sci-fi film or a chick flick. I want to know what I'm getting myself into. And so again, before we jump into Proverbs chapter 7, we'll talk just a little bit about Proverbs. In ancient Israel, there were three groups of people who communicated on behalf of God. And the first were the priests. They gave the law. The prophets, they gave direction and correction. And then there were the sages who gave counsel. And the book of Proverbs and its surrounding books, Job and Psalms and Ecclesiastes and Song of Solomon, are books by the sages. Scholars would call these books the wisdom literature. Having intelligence means you know things. Having wisdom means you know what to do in various situations. So we understand that you can be very smart without being very wise. Wisdom literature helps us learn, is written to make us become more wise, to help us know what to do in a specific situation. Most of the book of Proverbs was wrote primarily by King Solomon, who was purported to be one of the wisest men who ever lived. The Bible says of Solomon in 1 Kings 4 that he spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. He spoke of trees from the cedar that is in Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the wall. He also spoke of beasts and of birds and of reptiles and of fish. And people of all nations came to hear the wisdom of Solomon from all the kings of the earth who have heard his wisdom. And so in today's society, Solomon would have a master's in literature, probably some sort of recording deal for all of his songs, a PhD in philosophy and zoology and ornithology and herpetology, and maybe a few other ologies that I didn't take the time to look up. Solomon died sometime around the year of 931 BC. So again, most of this book was wrote by then, but Solomon didn't write all of the Proverbs. We believe that he wrote chapters 1 through 24, but then chapters 25 through 29 were compiled about 200 years later by some men from King Hezekiah. Proverbs 25:1 tells us that. The last of chapter 30 is written by a man named Agar, son of Jacob, and 31 written by a man named King Lemuel. We don't know anything about those men except that they were included as the writers of Proverbs. This morning, I want us to think about paths. Paths are the things that lead us somewhere. And when it comes to paths, the road that you're on determines where you'll end up. And that's a true statement. If I head north, eventually I will end up in Canada. Whatever road, whatever highway, whatever path I'm on, that's going to determine where I end up. Now, I can want all I want to end up somewhere else. I can pack my beach towel and my sunscreen and my Spanish dictionary with every hope that I will spend a week in Cabo. But if I head north instead of south, I'm going to end up in Canada and not Mexico. Now, I know there's some of you out there that say, well, if you head north long enough, you'll make it to Cabo. But you know what we're doing here. We understand that if we head north, that's where we're going to go. So again, your direction, not your intention, determines your destination. And as obvious as that is in the world of geography, when it comes to the rest of our lives, when it comes to our family life, to our financial life, our marriage or dating life, maybe the way that we raise our kids, our physical fitness, our professional life, really that same principle applies. In every area of life, my direction, not my intention, determines my destination. But how many times can you think of having a conversation with someone who's describing how their lives got shipwrecked, or how their marriage blew up, or how their kids became rebellious or resentful? How many times have you talked to kids who didn't get the grades they were hoping to make, or the sports team they were hoping to play for? And as they're describing what led up to their failure, you think to yourself, well, yeah, how did you not see that was coming? And if we take that principle of a path one step further, and it's so much a part of this life here on earth that it trumps almost every other thing that you've got really going for you, you can have the best of intentions and end up in the worst of situations. And that can happen to you whether you're the smartest person on the planet or the best looking or the biggest or the strongest. That principle is true no matter how strong-willed you are. It doesn't matter how nice of a person you are, no matter how much your parents loved you. When it comes to every area of your life, your direction, not your intention, is going to determine where you go. No, not your strength or your weaknesses or your hopes and your dreams. Again, the path you take will determine where you end up. And to illustrate that, let's look here in Proverbs chapter 7. Solomon here, with his audience 3,000 years ago, is going to tell a story. And he's going to tell all of us that story. We don't know whether this is a true story or one he just made up to demonstrate this principle. But as he tells the story, he's standing at a window looking down at the street. It says, "For at the window at my house, I have looked out through my lattice, and I have seen among the simple. I have perceived among the youths a young man lacking sense, passing along the street near her corner, taking the road to her house in the twilight, in the evening, at the time of night and darkness." Well, you don't have to be a Bible scholar to anticipate where this story is heading, do you? A young guy is cruising the streets at sunset, heading in the direction of a specific woman's home. And we will see here in just a few moments that he knew who this woman was. He probably knew she was married and apparently understood that her husband wasn't going to be around and that she would be around that street corner looking for whatever she might be looking for. And that alone should stop that young man in his tracks, but it didn't. In fact, that was the very reason why he was heading in her direction. And if we were able to get in this kid's head and tap into the soundtrack he had probably chosen for this particular evening, he would probably have John Legend's Green Light going on. Or maybe if he is into classic rock, he was listening to Born to Be Wild. But either way, this young man is confident that he was going to have a night that was going to be one to remember. Maybe one to brag to his friends the next morning. Meanwhile, back at the window, Solomon is watching this young man. And there's a soundtrack playing in his head as well, most likely the theme to Jaws. There is a marked contrast that we will see between what this kid is expecting to experience and what Solomon knew was in his future. And the reason why is because the older, wiser man understood from experience where this path was heading. The adolescent was preoccupied with what he believed would be an exciting event, a night of passion, a night that was disconnected from every other event in his life. But Solomon knew better. The night was not an isolated event disconnected from all other events in this young man's life. This night was a step down a path. And a path, like all paths, leads somewhere. This particular path had a predictable destination, but you don't need to be the wisest man in the world to know that. You could predict the outcome of this encounter with nothing to draw on but your own experience or someone that you know's experience. And it's funny kind of how that works, isn't it? What is so obvious to those watching from the outside is so hard to see when you're in the middle of it. Verses 10 and 12, the story continues. Behold, the woman meets him, dressed as a prostitute, wily of heart. She is loud and wayward. Her feet do not stay home. Now in the street, now in the market, and at every corner she lies in wait. And you can kind of sense that the music has changed. It's probably switched to something like Beethoven's Ninth, with the impending sound of fate knocking on the door. How's that go? Dun, 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 dun. That's sort of where he's at. Solomon says she seizes him and kisses him. And with a bold face, she says to him, I had to offer sacrifices, and today I have paid my vows. So now I come to meet you, to seek you eagerly, and I have found you. When this woman has said that she's made sacrifices, she's essentially saying, look, I'm not a prostitute. I've had plenty of money at home. I'm not after your money. I just want you. And she's also implying here that she's been to the temple, that she's got everything squared away with God. And then again, having already taken her sin bucket and dumped it out at the altar, she's ready to do what we all do with an empty bucket, isn't she? She's ready to fill it again with this young man. And this young guy is thinking, man, if my friends could see me now. I'm sure at this point, if he's listening to any music, he's got it pumped up to 10, and he's probably pinched himself to see if this is just a dream. And even if Solomon called down from his window and warned him, this kid wouldn't have heard him over the seductive words that came out next. There in verse 16, I have spread my couch with coverings, colored linens from Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love till morning. Let us delight ourselves with love. And I say, if you're over 30, you probably say, wow. And if you're under 30, you should say, whoa. And just in case you're wondering, she includes there in verse 19, for my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He took a bag of money with him at full moon. He will come home. And that pretty much clinches it right there. Not only did he not have to worry about the husband catching them, he could stick around for breakfast, watch a little TV, spend the entire weekend. From his perspective, this just kept getting better. But Solomon, again, saw this situation in an entirely different light. So let's listen to his take. There in verse 21, with much seductive speech, she persuades him. With her smooth talk, she compels him. And all at once, he follows her, as an ox goes to the slaughter. Well, that took a turn, didn't it? Shouldn't it be that like a celebrity goes into the club? Something better than that. But Solomon says, like an ox to the slaughter. Doesn't look like that from the casual observer, does it? Certainly doesn't look like that to this young man. But Solomon is not finished with his creative use of language. He has a couple more animal analogies for emphasis. He also includes, as a stag is caught fast till an arrow pierces its liver, or as a bird rushes into a snare, it does not know that it will cost him his life. So just in case you didn't get the ox to the slaughter, how about a deer stepping into a noose with a bloodied arrow hanging from its bowels? Or how about a clueless bird being caught in a snare? From his vantage point, Solomon knows that this young man was throwing away his future, possibly his life. Of course, if you were able to read this young man's mind, and he would have shouted back, you sound a lot like my old man. What would you have any idea about passion and love? This isn't just a date. This is a once-in-a-lifetime event. I'm not an ox. I'm not a deer. I'm not a bird. You should mind your own business. And at this point, Solomon's narrative changes. He's turned a corner, and he addresses the broader audience. The next words are directed at you and me there, verse 24. And now, my sons, listen to me, and be attentive to the words of my mouth. Let not your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths. And there's our word, paths. This was a path. This was not an event. And pay attention here to this next observation. For many a victim she has laid low, and all are slain are a mighty throng. Not a few, but many. Solomon debunked the notion that there was anything unique about what this young man was experiencing. It may have been unique for him, but this experience represents a well-worn path. A path that leads eventually to death, despite what this naive kid may have wanted to argue. If Solomon here could have called a timeout in the story and got this kid's undivided attention, he might have said something along the lines of, I hate to break it to you, but there's nothing unique or special or rare about this. You may have never felt this way before, but many people surely have. And if they were to tell you their stories, you would think twice. You're part of the crowd, a herd, a flock. There's nothing new here. And the outcome, it's all too predictable. She's done more here than capture his imagination. She's writing a script for his future. Solomon say, you're essentially a dead man walking. And driving home that point, I like the way that the NIV translates verse 27. Solomon adds, her house is a highway to the grave, leading down to the chambers of death. You think about that, a highway, a five-lane freeway with a diamond lane on the inside. There's nothing new about this. Again, there's nothing unique, just another young man who has chosen a path that will take him precisely to where he doesn't want or plan to be. There's some sort of disconnect. And the disconnect here in Solomon's scenario is easy to see, at least for all of us. A young man who wanted his life to be relationally richer chose a path that would ultimately undermine his relationships. A young man who yearned for something good chose a path that would lead to something not good. Again, a youth striving to prove his independence chose a well-worn path that had the potential to strip him of all his independence. There was that disconnect. Solomon could see it from his window, and I've seen similar disconnects from my imaginary window as well, and I know all of you have done the same. So let's just talk about us for a minute. We all have the propensity for choosing paths that lead us to where we don't want to be. Now, in a few weeks, I'll give you my take on what causes these apparent lapses of reason. But for now, I want us to focus on how this dynamic plays itself out in our world. Maybe in your world, for example, you know a single woman who says that I want to meet and marry a great Christian man who's really got his act together, and yet she goes out with whoever asks her as long as they're attractive. Or you find the man who says that I want to be a great partner in my marriage, and so he practices with every female that he dates along the way. A husband who says, I want my kids to respect me as they grow up, and he openly flirts with all of the women around town. A young Christian who says, I want to develop a deep and loving relationship with God, and so he gets up every morning, and the first thing he does is check his Twitter feed. The working man who says, I want to invest my latter years in the life of my grandchildren, but does nothing about his health in the current time. A regular guy, and this is me, who wants to be thin and lose a couple of pant sizes, who finishes every sentence with, and can you supersize that? There are so many like that. The list could go on and on. And the people my list represents have legitimate goals. And oftentimes, they have very good intentions of reaching them. But like the naive young man in Solomon's story, the paths they choose eventually bring them to the destination that is entirely different from the one they intended. And this isn't rocket science. We shouldn't need someone to connect those dots for us. If my goal, again, is to drop a couple of pant sizes, maybe I don't have donuts for breakfast. If you desire to remain faithful to your spouse, you don't linger in places where the opportunity of meeting other members of the opposite sex that are single are there. Those kinds of things aren't aren't pastimes. Those things are pathways. They eventually lead somewhere. And as I've already said this morning, it's much easier to see those dynamics at work in other people than in ourselves. In fact, probably right now you're thinking about several people that maybe that you wish that were here today and had heard what we're talking about. But before you start putting names to faces, take a minute and think about your own life. Are there disconnects in your life? Are there discrepancies in what you desire in your heart and what you are doing in your life? Is there an alignment between your intentions and your direction? And if you've ever got lost while driving, and who hasn't, you know that if you backtrack far enough, you can usually get your bearings back and be on your way. And worst case scenario is you've lost a few minutes or maybe a few hours. But the difference, when you get lost in life, backtracking is a lot different. When you get lost in life, you don't waste minutes or hours. You can waste an entire season of your life choosing the wrong path until it costs you your precious years. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants to wake up in their 50s and wish they had chosen a different path in their 30s. Nobody wants to arrive at the end of a marriage and wish they had taken a different path during their dating years. You think about that. A lot of you know this. You only get to be 20 once. You only get to graduate high school once. You only get one first marriage. The path we choose at those critical junctions doesn't just determine our destination for the following year, but really for the following season of life. The principle of walking the path is operating in your life every minute of the day. You're currently on some sort of financial path. You're on a relational path. You are continuing down a moral path, an ethical path, an entertainment path. And each of those paths have a destination, which again raises the question, why would a guy in Solomon's story walk down such a path? Now, how come he doesn't see what's coming? And the answer is simple. He doesn't know that he's on a path. He thinks it's an event, a one-time occurrence, when the truth is, God says your life and its destination isn't about the immediate. It is about the ultimate. You can't trump the principles of the path with good intentions. Again, and I've said it more than enough times, your direction, not your intention, determines your destination. All of us have been brokenhearted at various times in our lives, and we've wanted to know, why did God allow that to happen to me? And the truth is God didn't allow that. God could have stopped anything he wanted to, but God doesn't stop us. God allows us the ability to make our choice. And so this morning, what direction are you headed today? Morally, relationally, especially your relationship with Christ. And we could probe many other areas. I can't answer that question for you. Only you can answer that. How do you learn to choose the right path? I'm going to close this morning with just a few quick answers. The first thing is we could all use getting some wisdom. And that's what we're going to attempt to do here in the coming weeks, talking about Proverbs. Getting wisdom from Solomon and the rest of the writers of Proverbs. I think reading Proverbs will increase your wisdom quotient. There are 31 chapters in the book of Proverbs. You could wipe that out in a month. I think another thing is we need to have the ability to talk to one another. What if this guy had a friend looking out the window after him instead of a man who had no relationship with him? What if this friend had run down the stairs and grabbed him and rescued him before he ever made it to this woman's house? His whole life would have been different. Think about the people that you surround yourself with. Who do you have in your life that warns you from danger? And can you trust them? And then finally, make choices based on the long term and not the short term. See your life the way that others on the outside looking in see it. See your life the way that God sees your life, thinking about it as you're on a path, on a series of steps and not just a bunch of unrelated events. Think about what will happen if you pray every morning. Be nice to those people in your lives. Make choices based on what will develop if you do something over a long period of time. Because really that's the path that you're on every time you make a one-time decision. This morning, we offer you the opportunity to make another kind of decision, one that will determine where you end up ultimately on the path of life, and spending that with God in heaven. If you're at that point this morning to make that decision, we encourage you to come as together we stand and we sing.